All right, 2019. We're here.
We're here. Not going anywhere.
This is Michael McPhail and Cal Wilkerson. We wanted to sit down and go back over the books we wrote about this year and just kind of our thoughts on them and what we expect to do in 2019. So we started our little website back in July of 2017. And you know,
it was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, a year and a half ago, and have about 30 posts at this point, and 21 followers last I checked. I think our most popular post was probably the Sapiens one. I remember that one had the most views. Mm. I think because it's probably the more controversial book, and just the way we framed it with the question and answer. But so out of all the books we read this year, which you know how we did it was Cal and I, initially we started reading books together and would call each other and talk about it, but there was a moment where, you know, both of us thought about trying to create a website so we could put out some sort of content for
more whatever. More your idea. The creative genius.
Well, for whatever reason, we thought it would be cool to do this, and I think it's been a good accountability partner along with just like being friends. It's helped me just be like, when I read a book, make sure I can sit down and write out, analyze the book and kind of what my thoughts are. But I think, you know, our main goal with the whole website thing is just to promote good books, and not that we're the authority on what good books are, but, just to kind of spread the good news of, I mean, there's a lot of great books out there, and, you know, the biggest way I've learned about books was from a lot of podcasts I listen to, the recommendations, and it kind of balloons out into you kind of exploring different rabbit trails. But Cal, so, you know, in 2018, or I guess we can just start since the beginning. What's the one book you've read that you either wrote about or maybe that you didn't write about you think would be your favorite? I guess that's a hard question, but...
Before I dive into that, I just want to piggyback on something that you just said about, you know, it really is possible to be a lazy reader. And sometimes you may think that just the act of reading a book is enough, but it's really not. I mean, you can be so passive while you're reading a book and just kind of have your brain on autopilot, get to the end of a book and then realize you don't really know what you just read. You don't really know what takeaways you were supposed to have from that book. And this act of just sitting down and forcing myself to write a reflection on the highlights, it makes me a much more careful reader. And these books kind of become a part of you whenever you finish them. They're formative. They're way more formative than if you just tried to flip through a book and not get like some deep takeaway from it. But I'd say that the book that is so far like just changed my life more than any other book I've ever read was The Brothers Karamazov. That was a tough read, super long, very complex. The story took a lot of different twists and turns, but you know, it's almost in the genre of like philosophical novel.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
it was a novel, but it was almost a work of philosophy, and I feel like I learned so much just about like the meaning of existence from reading this book. And I love that we actually did read this one together.
Yes. Yeah, this was kind of the, I don't know what got us talking about the, maybe I think I had War and Peace and we were discussing like the great Russian authors for whatever reason. I think what we wanted to do was read Brothers and then read War and Peace, but that was just too much time in Russia, I think, for either one of us. But yeah, I liked how, you know, each brother was like its own, like a philosophy embodied. And I love stuff like that. I think there was definitely a commitment. It's probably the biggest book I've ever read as far as length and depth.
Yeah, I mean, it took me 3 months to finish this book.
Yeah.
And I was reading it at like no greater a pace than 20 pages a day. And I just remember like it would just be an investment because I would sit down and I would have my dictionary right here, and then like my notebook right here, and like several pens and pencils and like a highlighter. And it was just an investment of time. I just could not be passive at all whenever I was reading this.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, obviously I have the image of you in Woodville, Mississippi, upstairs in your parents' house. At this time, Cal was getting ready to go to Africa. Mm-hmm. You had a kind of a maybe 6-month break, and you were back home working, and just kind of, you know, we're both from small towns, so we understand, you know, what that looks like as far as being home for the summer and you know, being older and stuff like that. But yeah, it was definitely it was a book that made you work, you know, and I think that's something that we've lost in today's society, which it's easy to say, like, give an overview of society and point out the issues, but really and truly the effort it took was something I think it was like definitely a marathon in the every sense of the word.
Yeah, because I, you know, with Netflix and online streaming and things like that, YouTube, you can get a 2-hour movie that you know, can convey to you some deep philosophical truth, but it's only a 2-hour investment of your time. But to sit down for 3 months and have to work through these characters, yeah. I mean, it's almost like you almost feel like the characters are real, like they're like they're alive. And yeah, I just loved how all three of these characters, Alyoshka and Ivan, Dmitri, they all just like represented a different aspect of looking at life. One of them was
which one do you identify the most with?
Probably identify the least with Alyoshka, as much as I would love to, you know, I mean, he's obviously the protagonist and all that. Last night I felt like Yvonne, just being honest.
So this is, you know, if y'all hear anything in the background, we're not in a war zone, which it's probably debatable, but it's, you know, January 1st, so people are shooting fireworks in my neighborhood in Hattiesburg, but yeah, I think for me, you know, not to change the subject too much, but really, I'm just looking at it. It was my brother got me Storm of Steel, and I think I might have heard it. I might have heard it on the Jocko podcast. They might have talked about it on there. And I was just intrigued by, because, you know, in America we get, and it's a World War, it's based, you know, it's a true story. It's a memoir of Ernst Jünger, and you know, it's told from a German point of view, which I thought was really, it just kind of fascinated me because we have all the, especially World War One, with it being kind of overlooked in some ways. But just reading it, and I really felt, you know, we have on the website, on our blog, we have a picture of him, and he really was just a fascinating guy, very tough, and he saw, you know, one of the most gruesome wars that has ever happened. And I really felt like I was there with him in a lot of ways. Just the vivid detail he described scenes. It really, like, it just stuck. I think there was, and I might be getting confused, but, you know, he had fallen in love with this French girl when he was over there, and they had a break from the fighting. And, like, he had been with her, and he left. Like, he was leaving the house, and it was blown up, you know. So that kind of sums up, like, I don't know, he was a young guy, he fought. So I really identify, I think just because of his youth and his interest in war, and then seeing what it was really like. But he wasn't one of those guys that was, he almost enjoyed it. Like, there was a scene where the British had Indian soldiers, that they got from their colony, and there's this scene where they storm his trenches, like it's like basically hand-to-hand combat, and he said, this is a moment I've been waiting for my entire life. So he's kind of a warmonger, and it was really interesting because he doesn't sugarcoat anything, but he's also like, there's something special about war, that, you know, we kind of get the whole preachy thing from war movies and books about how terrible it is. And it is, I'm sure, but he was kind of like, he just operated. He was just one of those guys that operated well in that context and kind of liked it in a weird way. But that had a lot of powerful scenes in it, and I think that it would probably. I've thought about it like even this year. Like I'd like to pair some of my new books by rereading some of these books that had a big impact on me, because I think if you reread stuff, you see it in a different... Just like if you rewatch a movie, you notice things that you didn't initially. But that was one... I mean, that was our first post. I sat in my apartment in Laurel and figured out how to use WordPress, sort of, and just posted it after I finished, because people kind of teased me. Like, I really wanted an outlet to kind of share with people, like, hey, this is a great book, you should read it. And I posted something about it on Instagram, and people just kind of started teasing me. So I was like, I need to be really serious about this and create something that we can go through and post. But
yeah, I you know, as I was kind of gearing up for medical school, you know, deciding what I wanted to do, I wanted to read a book that sort of kind of framed it in the larger picture. And for me, that was When Breath Becomes Air. This is just like a really eye-opening book that really his whole life, Dr. Kalanithi, he had wanted to, like, he'd wanted to understand death, and he tried to do that. He was an English major, so he tried to do that through reading. He studied so many different prestigious universities, and he just realized that, like, death is not something that you can understand from the outside looking in. Like, you have to have a direct experience with it. And very tragically, as he was going through the very end of his neurosurgery residency, he contracted a inoperable lung cancer. Contracted isn't the right word, but he got an inoperable lung cancer.
He wasn't a smoker or anything?
No, wasn't a smoker. And wow. for his age, there was only a 0.0012% chance that he would get that lung cancer. And he had been working his entire life to get to the point where he was, and he was about to see it through. And then, he died. And in the 2 years that he was kind of battling cancer, he decided to write a book about it, and that's When Breath Becomes Air. It was just such a jarring and chilling book, because he never saw it published. It's like, it's really interesting to get to read the works, a work that's published posthumously.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, to think about, like, put yourself in those shoes and to think about, like, if you had died before even seeing, like, the fruits of your labor, like, would you still be motivated to do it? You know, would you still be motivated to write a book that you would never know of anybody reading?
Right.
You know,
and I think you went down, like, the books you've read and posted about have been very, like, you have this, you know, affinity to a certain extent with, I was thinking about, actually, when we were watching that movie just a minute ago, just like you with this book and, you know, Emperor of All Maladies, which you're going to hopefully do something with that. That
post coming soon.
Yeah, definitely. But like you definitely are not afraid to go to the, you know, the dark side and stay there for a while. Better than I. You're a lot braver than I when it comes to the intellectual space you kind of explore. And, you know, it also has its side effects, like what we kind of talked about last night, where, you know, you think of things that, you know, like Cal, last night, to everybody, give advice, some backstory, Cal was talking about how, you know, in his first year of med school, they had cadavers and, you know, you would dissect humans, and talked about how just kind of a jarring experience that is. And, you know, the more you talked about it, I was like, you know, it's hard. That's a hard thing to ask somebody to do. And, like, you think of it in the sense, and maybe it's because you're more self-aware of, like, you know, we were looking around the restaurant and you were thinking, you know, that was somebody at one point, you know. And not to get off into any graphic scenes that you would describe, but really, And even when we were at the beach this past summer when he was reading Emperor of All Maladies and just talking about cancer. It's the book about basically history of cancer, which is I bought it and basically Cal said I might not be smart enough to read
That's
it.
That's not what I told you.
He said there's lots of big words in it. So no, but I really appreciate – I guess aside, I just appreciate that about you. I admire that about you, and I hope to, you know, be able to do more of that this year.
Thank you. I appreciate that, man. And it can be a kind of a dark space to get into, but I think it's an important space to get into as well, because it's an inevitable reality, you know, that all of us are going to have to face someday. And I think it's better to be prepared for it than not. And I don't write yourself off. I think you've spent a lot of time with the Stoics this year.
Yeah. I think Ryan Holiday, who wrote, Obstacle is the Way, Ego is the Enemy, which is basically secondhand Stoicism. He would say that. He has a great blog as well, and he's been on a lot of podcasts I've listened to. But yeah, I think a book for me would definitely be Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. I read Seneca and Epictetus, kind of the big three, if you were going to stack them up. And it's just been – it's helped me kind of formulate mental maps – or just really give me a toolbox as far as like how to operate in my own head. And I need to revisit them. But like I said in the post, you know, Stoic philosophy is like black coffee for the soul, or for me it is. The addition of a little backstory, when I finished college, I moved to a small town and meditation. I had a lot more free time going from a university student to the professional world. Your time layout kind of changes from student to professional. Some ways better, some ways worse, but I knew after a week of being out on my own, you know, kind of getting familiarized with the new place, that I would definitely need something to kind of focus my attention on. So I read Meditations. I can't even remember. I think I bought the book for $1 off Amazon. It was like a used edition.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah. And I've reread it. I paid $1 for it. That's what it says in the post. But, you know, I liked how you kind of have this image of an old Roman emperor kind of writing down basically what he's learned throughout his life. And, you know, talking about death and understanding your place in the world, the Stoics do such a great job of realizing that you are dying, that they are dying, that death is inevitable, and living your life in light of that makes you a better person, or should, you know, in the sense of, like he says, since it is possible that you might depart from life this very moment, regulate every act and thought accordingly. And that's just something very good to be reminded of. And even our pursuit of, you know, running goals and all these challenges that we do. When we talked about this weekend, just the awareness of the passing of time, you know, and they do a very good job of that. But Seneca was great as well. I mean, all these philosophers have really fascinating backstories. Seneca, I think, probably was the most fascinating. Like, he would take cold baths, which was a Stoic. That was something that he did as a Stoic practice. He was really into running. Like, it was kind of a, even before running was a thing, that's what he would do.
But you also kind of learn, I think it's with Seneca, isn't it, that sometimes he didn't always practice what he preached.
Yeah. And I think that's probably true in our lives, too. Yeah. There's the man, the ideal self, and then the actual self. Mm-hmm.
There's the person that that we portray ourselves to be here on the blog.
The very goal-oriented, self-aware, straight-laced people. I really enjoyed my big three as far as the Stoic, my Stoic journey.
I'll tell you one journey that I took that was, it was really, really good for me in a lot of ways, was reading Kierkegaard's Fear and Trembling. So this was kind of my introduction to existentialism. And unfortunately, I don't think I've been the same since.
That book did get, I think it got to both of us in different ways, but keep going.
Yeah. So Kierkegaard was just so important for like the rest of philosophy afterwards. He's profoundly influential on Nietzsche, and then Nietzsche onwards influenced the phenomenologist. And so he really was just kind of like exploring this space of what does it mean to exist? What does it mean to have like a divine imperative on your life? And like, do your choices matter? Do you have any control over your choices? But I love this, and this is going to be kind of a lengthy quote, but I just want to share it
right now. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he said in – and also I love that he had a pseudonym – Johannes de Silentio.
Yeah.
John the Silent, while he was writing this book. But anyways, kind of a central premise. He says, everyone shall be remembered, but everyone was great wholly in proportion to the magnitude of that with which he struggled. For he who struggled with the world became great by conquering the world, and he who struggled with himself became great by conquering himself. But he who struggled with God became greatest of all. I think that's kind of been a mantra for me in this past year, is this whole struggling with myself in order to try to conquer myself. And it's sort of an underlying theme in this whole website, and like idea. But this concept of struggle, I relate to that so much. I just feel like I'm doing that on a daily basis. Not so much struggling with the world, but more struggling with myself. And struggling with God too, and just kind of like demanding answers, you know?
Yeah. And seeking answers.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of his, the struggle of personal existence, where sometimes it's easy whenever you are struggling against external forces, like when you're on a run or something, and it's, like a tough hill that you're running up, maybe the elements are bad, but the internal struggle is really what existentialism gets to the heart of. And that's what was so compelling about this book for me, and kind of going into stuff that we're going to be reading in 2019 and hopefully writing on. We're about to start Thus Spoke Zarathustra together by Nietzsche, and hopefully just continue this existentialism kick.
Yeah, I think just as you were saying that, you know, I need to pick a certain vein of philosophy, like I did with Stoicism, and explore it, which existentialism probably sounds like will be that.
Or phenomenology too, like doing some Martin Heidegger, some John Paul Sartre, but we're kind of laying the building blocks for even being able to understand that by reading Kierkegaard first, then Nietzsche, then, you know, those guys.
And philosophy is just one of those really great things that, you know, you can get into and just really go down some rabbit holes. Like Cal and I were on a walk today talking, and, you know, one of my goals this year is really just kind of embrace some rabbit holes and really chase them all the way to wherever it leads. I think that's just really fun. That's the fun
Might
thing.
Might be a scary place.
Yeah, that's just kind of the fun thing about, you know, just the great thing about books is they're really kind of portals into other worlds or other, you know, other thoughts that you would not have had without them. I think that's kind of my relationship to some extent, especially with philosophy. But then you also have the dark side of it, where you can really kind of mess yourself up, or not mess yourself up, but just really go down some interesting pathways. But
I mean, Heidegger ended up being a member of the Nazi party, so definitely if you chase these rabbits all the way to the end of the trail, you don't always know what's going to happen. So it's good to get lots of different viewpoints, you know.
Yep, I think that's important. And
to discuss ideas, you know, and not just be trapped in your own head.
Right. And I think, you know, Jordan Peterson talks about, like, you know, people don't have ideas, ideas have people. And, you know, sometimes I think about, I'm reading these books, but also they're reading me in a way, because it's like, I love to highlight, and I also love to go back, you know, a couple of, you know, months later after putting a book down and looking at what I thought was important at the time. And it's kind of like looking at your thoughts, you know, like what you were thinking at the time. It's really, really neat. But I think we definitely need to talk about our most popular post, which was Sapiens, which I've seen a lot of people starting to read that. Like, it's been, which I think it was really popular when it came out, because I remember President Obama put a post about it, or said that was one of his favorite books. And then Recently saw Joe Rogan was reading it or listening
to
it.
Well, he's got a new one out now, I think, called, like, Homo Deus, maybe? It's, like...
I did see that,
yeah. It's, like, the future of...
speculative.
Speculative future, yeah.
Wildly speculative. I'm just kidding. I'm sure it's really thought out, but...
Yeah, so this is Dr. Noah Yuval Harari.
I wasn't even going to try to say his name.
So he's a professor, I'm pretty sure, at Hebrew University in Israel, which interestingly was founded by, to a large degree was set up by Einstein, actually. But that's such an aside. Anyways, Sapiens is just a really, really cool book. It's like if you didn't have time to take anthropology,
biological anthropology, yeah, or something. I took biological anthropology and I could have just read this book.
Yeah, like it really is. It'll save you a couple thousand dollars on a college course.
Right.
But he kind of, you know, in our cultural climate, just where we are geographically and culturally, you're just not allowed to like say a lot of speculative things about humanity that makes us sound a little bit less less deified than we like to make ourselves be. And he just kind of breaks it down and just gives you the facts, really, of the story of humanity.
Yeah, like he goes through the cognitive revolution, the agricultural revolution, just like all these different, it's just a history of humans. I think it's really profound in its own way, especially I particularly enjoyed the early on, the earlier parts of the book, just talking about early man. I'm just fascinated by early man, just the just all the, I guess, prehistory. It's not written down. I wish I could, you know, go back and kind of see what things were like.
Right. I loved just all the stuff that he talked about, just like all the symbolism that we have around ourselves, just talking about how all the rules essentially are made up. Like, there's no reason, there's no real reason why a corporation, he talks a lot about a company and a corporation should even exist, or why money should have any value at all.
Yeah.
He says at one point that there's something like, you know, somewhere in the double digit trillions of dollars in circulation in the world, but only like 1 trillion of those are backed up by any sort of paper money.
Yeah.
And so it's like, he basically just talked about how we're just playing an imaginary game with money. It's like, it's not real. It doesn't actually exist.
Yeah.
And there's so many levels of like society and human interactions that are like that. Like, corporations are like that, contracts are like that, our whole legal system is like that, where everyone's just playing this giant, very elaborate game. And he just like breaks it down, like, how did we get here, how do we get to this point.
Yeah. And I'm looking at a picture, I have the book with me, and I'm looking at a picture on page 6 and 7. It says, our siblings, according to speculative reconstruction, there's a Homo rudolphensis, Homo erectus, and Homo neanderthalus, which is kind of interesting just to see. It says we are all humans, but just like the we talked about it today, just thinking about that there were other humans, like other types, and I just thought that was I kind of think about that a lot when it comes to prehistory.
There's a lot of speculation there.
It is. So prehistory. See, I was into the speculative prehistory, and you're into the, you know, why are we doing all of this? Like, none of this, there's no backup for it.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, there really isn't. But, I mean, let's be honest, the most, the real most interesting part of this book was kind of his, like, where do we go from here? Like, what's
right
next?
At the end, yeah.
So he talks a lot about, like, are we approaching a singularity? You know, are we approaching a point where, like, man kind of merges into AI? And here we are sitting on a table, both with, like, this electronic wire stuck into our ears, and we're talking into a microphone that's feeding into, like, an extension of ourselves, i.e. the cell phone.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, like, uncanny it's happening, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder if it would just be easier to have your, you know, have your phone linked to you.
Yeah, or just to have it like a contact lens, you know, that you put in.
I mean, now we're getting into Black Mirror.
We're basically just talking about Black
basically
Mirror.
Basically, we're writing a new Black... Well, they already have that.
Yeah, so. I'm sure they already have this one.
I liked how we did this post, and I think we should do it more, which if we ever get sophisticated and post videos, But we basically had set up like an interview. We had a question, and then Cal and I would both answer the question. No, what we did was we asked each other different questions. Mm-hmm. It was like five for five.
Yeah, you asked me five, I asked you five. Yeah. And we thought about them, wrote them down. This book was just kind of the classic. Besides the anthropology part, towards the end of it, it just kind of became classic dystopian. You know, all your good dystopian movies, like, is this what's going to happen? Are we all just going to be, like, addicted to can we start taking, like, a daily happiness pill or something like that, you know, to sedate us? It was fascinating. But this idea of the singularity and, like, heading towards AI was just crazy, too, man. I'm sure... Like, you know, we both listened to that Elon Musk interview. He covered it a lot better than either of us can. Yeah. But
I think it's interesting when people talk about the singularity and if it's out there, you know, in the internet or however it would be. I can't remember who said it. It might have been Elon Musk. It might not have been. But, you know, why would it reveal itself to us, you know?
Yeah.
It might already be. Oh, it was Werner Herzog's documentary, Lo and Behold.
Yeah,
that's it. Because that's right. They talked about the. It's a great documentary, and it's about the creation of the internet. And Werner Herzog, in his own way, addresses that. It's really just him exploring just the genesis of the internet. But there was a professor. He talked to somebody. He interviewed somebody. He's like. You know, it might be out there already and just not revealed itself to us. And it's just crazy to think about. I think about that sometimes.
It's waiting for the right moment.
Right. And it would know, like Elon Musk said, like our thoughts, our greatest hopes and desires.
We're giving it to him.
It knows. Giving it would know it to everything. It.
Yeah. I just think about every time that you get on to Facebook and there's some app that wants to access your computer, you just read accept terms and continue. You just click it. You don't know what you're actually feeding to some Silicon Valley computer that's creating this giant cybernetic collective, as Elon Musk likes to talk about.
Yep.
It's not just that we're complicit in creating this thing. It's like we're active participants. And I think that's kind of what Harari is getting at. It's like maybe our purpose for existence is to create the next thing, you know, like we've kind of,
that would be our legacy,
right?
Yeah.
Like we will create something and then that thing will surpass us.
Yeah. It's really interesting to think about. And I think like in our picture, we have an ape and a man and then like the Terminator, you know, basically the Terminator.
Who is that man that we have in that picture?
I don't know. Just like a stuff. I think it's like a thinking. I Googled like thinking man, the black and white.
It's probably a copyright. Yeah. That we violated.
I try to get ones that aren't copyrighted, but you know, we have the ape, the man, and then like basically a android. And I think that got us raised a lot of eyebrows. I think it's probably a more controversial post, but it's hard. It's really hard for me, I think for everybody, to accept our history, our biological history.
Yeah, people just don't want to, they don't want to believe that narrative.
Yeah,
you know?
It's tough. It's a tough one to...
I mean, you can't definitively prove it, and that's the thing. You know, you can't go back into a lab and redo it, redo the experiment, but... And a lot of it is just speculative, which is why it's so controversial. You know, you'll find a piece of pottery buried underneath 10,000 years of sediment, and all of a sudden now you're making up some story about an elaborate civilization. But
well, I think one book that we both have found our way to, and that, you know, he kind of caught the internet on fire probably in 2018, maybe late 2017, but, you know, Dr. Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. As and Cal, I think it's on Rule 11. Like he's almost finished with it, but Jordan Peterson has helped just kind of change my life in a lot of ways. I called it the Canadian Lions Rules for Life or something like that.
Rules for Engagement, I think. Oh yeah, Canadian Lions Rules for Life.
Because he really, it's just fascinating to watch. And some of my friends and I have talked about, you know, Peterson is in like his own category and. He goes toe-to-toe with the best of the other side. I don't really know how to define him.
I'd say like he's so liberal that he's conservative.
I think that's probably the best way to describe it. I think, and people, the internet specifically misses that. Like there's a lot of left leaning sites or whoever or outlets that will attack him, but he's pretty liberal in some other ways. Mm-hmm. He has some conservative viewpoints on marriage and stuff like that, which I think is probably healthy. But his 12 Rules for Life, really, that book is definitely great in its own way and helped me. I think a lot of young men, he definitely was what we as young men needed for our generation to hear.
He's got like a 21 to 35 year old like young male niche is kind of his like core followers.
Yep. And
but I love the title of this book too, just An Antidote to Chaos, because I was telling you that yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is that sometimes, even though like my life has an appearance of stability right now, you know, sometimes I feel like the train's about to come off the track, you know. Yeah. And that's kind of what I think, that's why Peterson's probably appealing to me, you know, is that you just sometimes you're having to stave off this feeling of like impending chaos, and he kind of gives you a way to organize your life so that you don't, so the train doesn't come off the tracks.
And I like how he marries, like he sees the value of like mythology, religion, and he also somehow marries it towards psychology and science. It's all this one big masterpiece he's been able to do as far as connecting the dots. And you know, his lecture series, The Psychological Significance of Old Testament Stories in the Bible, I mean, you know, if you sit down and work through that series and take notes, I mean, that's a straight up education as far as understanding symbols and meaning and just drawing out this. It's almost like he goes from a different angle than like say your traditional pastor would.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, what you hear from him you would not probably hear in church.
Mm-hmm. And in some ways it's more important, you know. I mean, there's some deeper underlying meanings to the stories that I feel like you won't get in a church just because people are scared that you may be explaining away, you know,
right,
the historical reliability of the story. But whether or not Peterson just shows you that whether or not the story actually happened is irrelevant, you know.
Yes, that, and I think that has helped me in a lot of ways and given me a real, and one of my goals this year is to really explore mythology more and explore these symbols and meaning and all. I guess this would be definitely one of the rabbit holes I would go down, for sure. But
yeah, and I kind of hit a stretch there where I got really into a couple of different science books. So I did a
I did a
post on Cosmos by Carl Sagan, and we were actually just watching a little video on was the Little Blue Dot, is that
Pale Blue Dot,
the Pale Blue Dot, yeah,
which is a great 3-minute video of putting things in perspective.
Yeah. But definitely Sagan's Cosmos helped me to put things in perspective a lot. And I also did one on Einstein, the biography by Walter Isaacson, and just kind of like getting inside of like the mind of like Carl Sagan and
Stephen Hawking. We read A Brief History of Time.
We did, yeah. And then I also did Sean Carroll's book, The Big Picture. So
yeah, you did this whole... yours was, you explored the, you had some science and then you had the medical, I don't know what you call it, but the kind of the doctors battling disease, which Emperor of All Maladies as well.
Yeah. I just really, I really liked that kind of getting into the mind's eye of these scientists and these people who just thought way, way outside of the box. But, you know, science really is an extension of philosophy. And so there's no disconnect there. It's, you know, science used to just, like, chemistry and physics used to just be called natural philosophy before they became their own subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys, there's so much more than than scientists. Like Einstein was so much more than a scientist. Sagan was so much more than a scientist. They were really constructing a philosophy and a worldview where you could, you know, look at something like the pale blue dot and just really put things into perspective about not making such a big deal whenever things aren't going your way in life, because in the cosmic, you know, scale of things, there's a lot of humility involved there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A lot of humility. I'm not saying don't take
ownership. Well, we talked about it in the pale blue dot video, you know, astronomy is a humbling endeavor.
It is a humbling endeavor. Yeah. And those were humbling books to read too. Yeah. Definitely.
I think, you know, transitioning into, was there anything else you want to say about, let's see, anything else about this past year?
Man, we could talk for three hours
for a long time about that. Yeah. But I guess those would be definitely the highlights that we brought up. And we're just going off script. There are no notes or anything.
Let's also, you know, not fail to mention or at least thank, you know, we had a couple of contributing writers as well. My good friend Sam Politz, he did a couple of articles.
He's done some great ones.
Yeah.
Sam, he always, you know, brings a lot of, I mean, you can tell he's you know, just by the way he writes, he's a very intelligent guy.
He's pursuing right now a concurrent master's in theology and philosophy at the Dominican School of the Graduate Theological Union. So he, I kind of enter this thought space as a hobby and as a supplement to my life, but he lives there, man. Yeah. That's it. That's his
He's job. Living out. He is living out a lot of probably what we just talk about and not actually do.
And then my brother, Garrett, yeah, he wrote one or two. I'm not, maybe just one.
Yep.
And
then Kate's threatened to write one, but,
yeah,
you know, I'm starting to learn that she's she likes to make a lot of plans.
We're holding out hopes.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see our first woman author.
Yeah,
which great. Is not, you know, we're geared towards, I mean, probably just our peer group, which would be young men. But anything that encourages, I think, as far as the philosophy of our site has always been just, you know, reading books that encourage you to be a deeper thinker, a better man, to challenge you, to make you be a man of action, that type of thing, which all these books have.
And just the process, you know, it's not about how many books you finish at all.
That's right.
You know, it's like you just got to be able to look up a month and a half into 3 months of reading Brothers Karamazov and just say, like, you know, this what I'm doing right now is intrinsically worthy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the struggle, going back to Fear and Trembling with Kierkegaard, like, the struggle is it's worthy. It's worth it.
Yep.
And it molds you and makes you into a tougher, better, more thoughtful person, I think.
And our quote that we have from Emerson, you know, if we encounter a man of rare intellect, we should ask him what books he reads. So,
yeah.
That's kind of, I really
not won't. That either of us are men of rare intellect.
No, no. But after, you know, a year and a half or however long, you know.
It's been a year and a half, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think we are far more intellectual than we were.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the best as far as pursuit of knowledge goes, but let's see, I guess we can kind of hit maybe some goals for this upcoming year, maybe some books that are on our radar, and just kind of wrap it up from there.
Yeah, well, we've already mentioned Thus Spoke Zarathustra.
Yep.
That's going to be top of the list.
Give me five from you.
Okay.
And why? Five and why.
All right. So I guess I'll cheat and use Thus Spoke.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be one. Yeah. Okay, so
yeah.
Four for both of us now.
I want to read East of Eden by Steinbeck this year. That's a book that it's also another, like, philosophical novel. But Steinbeck, he loved California. Like, he was a big, big, big fan of California. And I'm going there this summer on a trip. And so I kind of just want to understand California better. But it's a retelling of, like, the first, like, 10 or so chapters of Genesis.
Mm.
But it's a retelling in a modern narrative. Well, semi-modern, Steinbeck's time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just a great piece of Americana, but also that philosophical novel that I'm looking for. Retelling of Genesis, complex stories. So, yeah, I'm going to read that this year. Really looking forward to that. I bought Infinite Jest so that I could put it on my coffee table and people would think highly of me.
Cal Foster Wallace.
Yeah. But, yeah, David Foster Wallace has been a guy who I've been trying to get inside of his mind a little bit ever since listening and reading the This Is Water
speech. Which is a great speech.
Yeah, it was just really captivating. And then also watching Into the Tour the other night.
I watched that
on Netflix. That was pretty good. But I don't want to get too far inside of the mind of David Foster Wallace because, unfortunately, his life ended in tragedy.
Yeah.
But he just – he has this this real ability to just be – totally aware of everything that's going on around him, and to just kind of see through the veneer of a lot of the things that we do to entertain ourselves. And so I'm going to try to read Infinite Jest this year. So that one, East of Eden, Thus Spoke, Zarathustra. Man, those are the big three. Let me.
Okay.
You tell me yours while I still chew.
You know, for me, Plutarch's Lives, Volume 1 and 2, which I'll just count that as one, which I've started it, so I'm about 200 pages in, and, you know, Plutarch does a great job of comparing, you know, ancient Greek and Roman leaders, heroes from the past and what they did, and then we'll do, like, a pairing, which it's just really neat just because that's something that has always been on my list, and pretty much any list you read of like books you should read, they're always on there. And then Edith Hamilton's Mythology, sitting on my desk, and Iliad and the Odyssey and the Aeneid. So I kind of paired all those together. It's more, and I really want to read The Denial of Death. That would be, because you read that.
I still haven't written a post on that.
That would be a great one, and Emperor of All Maladies. I have basically a banker's box of books, a true banker's box full of books that I need to read.
And now that you finally deleted your Instagram, you
my
can...
My precious.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about time management on our walk today, you know, kind of kicking off the new year and trying to eliminate time wasters. My Amazon Fire Stick actually broke, so... I don't have the access to that. I'm too lazy to buy another one. So, like I said, I'll just kind of wallow in indecision and maybe buy one later or a new one. But those are kind of the ones that are on my radar right now. I'm trying to think. Oh, Dante's Inferno and Paradise Lost, which you've read both of those, and I might have to do a little research on the side. But I've always had those books. You kind of have that... whatever you want to classify those two books as. But yeah, that's kind of, that was a lot more than five, but I've been thinking a lot about my list. I think I have like 21 books, 22 books I want to read. And then what inevitably happens, I veer off the list by, you know, not even at the end of the year, I probably read half the books that I set out I was going to read. But then also I have a lot of other books that I've, you know, either heard on a podcast that I've picked up or been recommended by, you know, a close friend. But
yeah, actually, I'm going to spend less time on Instagram and more time on... I forgot about the Goodreads
app. Oh, yeah. I use it religiously.
Product placement right there.
Yeah.
The Goodreads app.
Yeah, Goodreads is great.
But, yeah, you can kind of just...
For nerds.
Cause,
for
you know,
like
someone,
us.
Yeah, because someone will ask you, like, you know, what are some books that you want to read? And, like, even though you have all these books that you want to read, you just completely blank and forget. And they're like, oh, this man isn't interesting at all. You know?
It's a good quick reference.
Yeah.
Like you just did there.
But, yeah, there's another book that I, you know, kind of just keeping with the philosophy vein and with the German philosophers, I really want to read this book called At the Existentialist Cafe, Freedom, Being, and Apricot Cocktails by Sarah Bakewell. She kind of just... gives a great overview of the philosophy and the life and times of Heidegger and Sartre and these different German philosophers. And so also I want to read Being in Time by Martin Heidegger and then Being in Nothingness by Jean-Paul Sartre. So
you definitely have your eyes set on those.
And then I'd also, if I have time, I like to read History of Western Philosophy by Bertrand Russell.
I've heard a lot about Bertrand Russell, but never read anything by him.
And then there's actually two other, well, you know, this is very ambitious, but Nietzsche also wrote Beyond Good and Evil, and then he also wrote The Birth of Tragedy. So both of those are very tempting for me to pick up. Maybe we'll see how Thus Spoke goes first.
I really want to read Carl Jung's Modern Man in Search of Soul, or it's something like that. One of my friends was reading it, and... he's kind of been tugging me a little bit, I think, because Peterson references him a lot. Oh, and this is one that would be really great, and Peterson references this. So what happens when you read, you know, a particular author, they reference somebody, and then you want to read the source. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to read the Gulag Archipelago, probably the abridged version, because, you know, the three-volume set is, you know, massive. But they have a great abridged version. I think Peterson wrote a
You backing down from a challenge? Is that what you're doing?
maybe. So that's kind of what's on my radar for this year, and I need to make it happen, like we were talking about. Just
we got a whole year, man. We got 365, 24-hour days to get it done.
Yeah, we have the time. We have 24 hours.
Yeah.
In a day.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about how, you know, it's so tempting to just, whenever you wake up in the morning, scroll through Instagram for 30 minutes. Whenever you go to bed at night, lay in bed and scroll through Instagram or Facebook or whatever apps on your phone for 30 minutes. It's like, boom, there's an hour right there. An hour of your day just completely gone.
Yeah.
And you think about it like, you sleep on average 8 hours a day. If you live to be 100, like, you spent 33 years of your life asleep.
Yep.
And so you've got so little time anyways, and you're going to spend an hour of it, like, scrolling through Instagram. And I'm preaching to the choir because this is what I do, you know. But just having that self-awareness, I think, is going to allow us to get it done, to read these books, to not, like – and that's kind of the whole purpose of this site and this idea is, like, why should we – just let these be like wishful thinking, you know, like, we can read these books. We have, you know, we've done a year and a half of it. So,
yeah. And, you know, the whole site thing, I think about it too, like, you know, when we are gone, it'll exist in some way, however, you know, on the internet. But,
yeah, it's kind of a cool little legacy thing.
Yeah. Kind of a testament to the, leave.
And I hope it's helpful to, if it's even helpful to one person.
I think I don't know how, you know, diligent, you know, there are 20 people that follow, which is cool. You know, if we had 20 people in this room, that's a lot of people.
It'd be a party.
Yeah, it would be a party. And they're all interested in what we have to say about these books. And hopefully, you know, it gets people inspired to either read the books themselves or get something like it. A book that's similar. So 2019's here. We have 30 posts. Cal's gonna work on 31 and 32.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dying for The Emperor of All Maladies. I bought that book, you know. I was reading 12 Rules for Life at the beach, and Cal was reading
Emperor of All Maladies.
And it was funny, you know, as a closing, we were in Destin, and, you know, for some reason, the pairing of cigarettes and the beach is just too good to pass up for a lot of people. And Cal would just be sitting there reading that book, and somebody would walk by smoking a cigarette, and then he would proceed to tell me, you know, just the history of cancer. So that's just kind of how the friendship we have.
We just can't help ourselves, you know.
We like, can't.
Just got to have that cigarette, man.
But yeah, so 2019, and, you know, I've really enjoyed all of this, and hopefully this is just going to be a long forum. I don't know how to edit audio. I don't know. I really wouldn't know what to do with it, but I guess we'll post this and kind of start 2019. I'll hopefully be more efficient. I think that was my big thing, just being efficient with my time this year, because I think we're both aware of time, and a lot of people – some people aren't. I'm not saying a lot of people. Some people aren't, and they just kind of go with the flow. But just being more efficient with it. So,
because we'll be sitting right back here in 2020 before we know it.
Yeah, you know? Maybe I'll live in a different place. I don't know. But it's funny how what a year can do to you. So, but you have anything else for the people of the interwebs?
Nah, man, it's been fun. Just want to encourage everyone to be the best version of themselves this year. And to stretch themselves intellectually, and don't be afraid to pick up a challenge, you know.
Right.
The bigger the book, the more rewarding.
That's so true. And, you know, goals are set. You can set them. It doesn't have to be the beginning of the year, you know, resolution-wise. I set them all the time. So.
And if you, you know, find yourself in February and you have broken every single one of your resolutions, the great thing is we get a fresh start every single morning. You know,
that's true.
I mean, you can turn the car around at any point. So yeah, don't set a goal and feel like you just have to realize it in January or else you can't do it at all. You know.
Well, appreciate it, Cal, and, you know, whoever's listening to this, we appreciate that, and we will hopefully post some more stuff, and hopefully everybody will have a good 2019. So we'll sign off.